Welcome to NPD Soundbites from ANPD, the Association for Nursing Professional Development. This is the NPD Forecast. Your hosts, Jen Bodine and Jillian Russell, are nursing professional development specialists with years of dynamic NPD experience. Jen and Jill round out ANPD's Nursing Professional Development Practice Team and are your personal environmental scanning forecasters. This podcast series features topics that are relevant to the forecasting of future trends for NPD practice and discusses implications that you can apply to your daily practice.
ANPD is on a mission to advance the specialty practice of nursing professional development. And these days, we're finding innovative ways to deliver valuable education and opportunities to connect. This August, log on and join NPD team members from across the country for Aspire to Inclusivity, the online ANPD annual convention. Taking place August 3rd through 6th on a robust online event platform, this year's convention program delivers 4 days of premier education and the opportunity to earn more nursing continuing professional development contact hours than ever before. Connect with attendees and exhibitors live and access both live streaming sessions and recordings you can view at your own convenience. This flexible online event allows your entire NPD team to enjoy the benefits of continuing professional development. Register now to join the ANPD community at Aspire to Inclusivity. Early registration rates end July 2nd. Learn more at www.anpd.org/convention.
Welcome everyone to the NPD Forecast. I'm Jen Bodine.
And I'm Jillian Russell. A partner for practice transitions role is one of the 7 roles of the NPD practitioner identified in our nursing professional development scope and standards of practice. As a leader, the NPD practitioner supports the transition of nurses and other healthcare team members across learning and practice environments, roles, and professional stages. Jen and I are so excited to have one of our own board members, Rachel Frisia, join us today to speak about practice transitions in nursing professional development. Rachel is the treasurer for our board of directors, and Dr. Frisia is the director of employee education at Lovelace Medical Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico, covering 2 hospitals and several outpatient services. She also serves as interim director of post-surgical services and currently serves as the program director for their entry to practice nurse residency program. She received her DNP with distinction from the University of New Mexico for her research on blended cohort nursing fellowships and created a Navajo nurse residency program in collaboration with the CNO from Indian Health Service Chinle Service Unit for her DNP project. With her previous employer, she is credited with the development and implementation of their transition to practice nurse residency and oversight of 3 transition to specialty residencies and 3 fellowships, all of which were accredited with distinction by ANCC. She received the Partners for Practice Transition Award by ANPD in 2017 and co-presented at the 2019 ANPD Annual Convention on Residency Outcomes. She is certified in nursing professional development, the founder of the New Mexico ANPD affiliate, and currently serves as our ANPD treasurer. Rachel, we are so excited to have you join us today, and it is obvious you are the perfect person for us to have here to talk about this very important NPD role. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
So, Rachel, as I was reflecting on the Partner for Practice Transitions role, I thought it would be helpful to, I guess, demystify what this role really entails. NPD practitioners may only see themselves in this role if they oversee a nurse residency program, but NPD practitioners fulfill this role on several different levels. And this could occur through preceptor and preceptee support, orientation and onboarding processes, formal and informal mentorship, and most certainly through transition to practice programs, including nurse residency programs and fellowships. Also, I think to wrap at least my arms around the importance of this role, it helps to reflect on our own practice transitions. Rachel, can you share with us what practice transitions you have experienced in your nursing career?
Sure, I'm happy to share that. And quite a few. I gotta say, I'm kind of a jack of all trades. I've had a whole lot of roles in my nursing, in my 25 years of nursing. So I first started out as a new nurse at a trauma center, county trauma center at in Houston, Texas. And I started out in the medical ICU, and I was the first new grad that they had ever hired into their medical ICU. It was very tough to get in there, but I was really determined, imagine that, that it was going to be me. And it was kind of interesting. I had a preceptor for 3 months, and now that I'm 25 years later looking back, I realize that's pretty good. But my preceptor, it was obvious she hadn't precepted a new grad in many years. She was very experienced herself and British and really strict. And this was kind of back in the days when it was a little bit okay to haze your new hires. So I can't say it was the easiest transition for me, but I didn't know any better, which is part of the reason why we need residency programs so bad, is because you don't know what you don't know. I was just eager and happy to be there, hazing and all. So that was a great transition. And then from there, I transitioned into my specialty at the time, which was transplant. And that was quite a big transition. I did solid organ, heart, lung, liver, kidney, pancreas transplant. And from there, I transitioned to blood, bone marrow, stem cell transplant. And from there, I left the floor to do clinical research with that focus on liquid tumors and transplant. So these are some major changes in my career, doing things that are totally different. I spent a good few years in that clinical research arena doing everything from being the person in the lab, spinning the samples, all the way to managing, doing monitoring, auditing, and working with the FDA. And I transitioned again into finance. And I actually worked research finance for 7 years of my career. And I actually reported to an accountant. So that too transition was very, very different. And then the final major change was into nursing professional development as an educator. So one more time, a novice. I guess I'm really into being a novice because I don't hesitate to make these pretty big changes in my career. But what is very clear is, particularly, again, when you're coming in new to a specialty or new to the field, you need a really supportive orientation plan, conscientious plan is like what I like to say, with a solid preceptorship to make a smooth transition and be successful in that role.
Rachel, I just have to make a quick comment. And I smile when I hear your past transitions. And when you mentioned clinical research, that's a background of mine as well. And I spent a few years in clinical research prior to finding my passion and specialty in NPD. So that's really exciting to hear that there's another NPD out there with clinical research as a background, because it certainly is a specialty in and of itself, where you often find yourself reinventing the wheel to orient and onboard yourself. So now being on the side of NPD, it's like, oh gosh, this is a group of nurses who could really benefit from having an NPD practitioner and supporting them in their transition to practice. So that's exciting. I'm really excited to hear about your background.
Oh, thanks. It's been fun. I keep growing.
It's been fun and diverse, which is the nice thing about anybody who ever says that they don't like nursing anymore. I kind of equate it to people who say they don't like wine. You just haven't found the right one. And that's how it is in nursing, because there's so many different types of nursing, which I think is why it's so important that as NPD practitioners, we support these role transitions. It really does help to keep people not only in our specialty, but also within our organizations, if we can offer them those different opportunities. So I think if an organization is thinking about looking at retention, decreasing turnover, turning to your NPD department and discussing how you can help facilitate these role transitions I would think is integral to those things. So that I'm glad that you have that diverse background and the listeners can hear that, because it gives us all hope that you find that niche that you really love, or that you can keep searching for your whole career and just, you know, just have fun with it. So I do want to ask you, because I think sometimes, depending on the organization you work on in, and I've worked at a bunch of different ones. I'm a military spouse, so I end up hopping all over the country and take whatever job is available at the time. So I've worked in small little rural hospitals and large healthcare systems. And sometimes I have a very segmented role, so it just focuses on a very specific NPD role. And then at smaller institutions, I find that I cover all seven roles. So I want to ask you specifically if you could give us a little background on how you came to oversee the specific responsibility of Partner for Practice Transition Program at your organization.
So I have been at my current organization for less than a year. And I was really excited to take a position here because I knew that they had a nurse residency program in place. But what they really were looking to do is to elevate that program and go on that accreditation journey. And it's a small nursing community here in Albuquerque. So the leadership here, I had already known within the nursing community and other professional organizations. So my work at my previous employer was known. So I was really excited to say, oh my God, I would love to do that. I would love to come on in here and really take this program and how can we elevate it and get it to that accreditation status, because that really gets your name out there, gives it credibility, and really helps you compete in the market. We only have two other accredited programs in the city. So we do have our two competitors. Their programs are accredited, as I mentioned. So it was very important that we also go on that same journey. But what we realized pretty quickly, actually, was that, you know, right now, about the setting that we have with COVID, a lot of folks have a lot of travelers to help support the staffing, right? And that's not cheap. That's expensive to do. And what we noticed is, how can we facilitate our specialty areas by growing our own and therefore, you know, decreasing our dependence on travelers in those areas. Those are actually much more expensive to staff with travelers, and build internally our own workforce pipeline and help with that same as you just mentioned, which is this practice transition and growth throughout your career. So we actually went down the path of having two internal job fairs and saying, hey, have you ever wanted to be an ICU nurse? Have you ever wanted to work in the ED? Did you ever want to work in our CVICU? We have one of the few in town. So, you know, if that's what you want to do, join us. We're going to put you in a fellowship. And so we really worked on having this fellowship component for that practice transition. So that way we can keep our nurse residency new grad program coming in, filling our progressive care and med-surg areas, and then taking our own in those areas and developing them to the specialty. And really creating that full workforce pipeline, which is what I see that role of practice transition really does. It brings you from school to the workplace. From once we get you here in the workplace, we take you to that new grad residency, to staff, from staff to the fellowship, or even towards certification. So just helping them continue to grow throughout that entire career path and keep people engaged.
I love that, Rachel. And I like something you said there at the beginning, talking about costs, because I think that that is often where we tend to fail as NPD practitioners. As a matter of fact, we just had in our discussion board someone asking about how to support their preceptors with leadership, how to indicate that they needed more support. And I was like, if you want support from leadership, you have to give them the numbers. So can you talk to us a little bit about kind of diving into that? Because, you know, I think that business acumen is not something that nurses in general and NPD specifically are familiar with. And that's really the language we need to be able to have to support these programs.
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. I do like finance. Obviously, that's one of the reasons I ran for treasurer. But I have some, like I was mentioning before, is the research finance background that I learned from an accountant. And it really opened my eyes to just that, how to speak that language to get what we want. I think oftentimes, you know, we're trying to present our business case, but if you're not well-versed in how to do that, we might not get the ear and that we expected and the responses that we wanted. So what we did here is we really were looking at cost. I'm sitting with senior leadership. I love my senior leadership, super supportive. From CFO to CNO, CEO, we're at the table having these conversations. And it was very clear, hey, we can't continue necessarily with all these very expensive contracts. So what are we going to do? Oh, well, great. The easy idea, what most people would think is, well, you hire, right? Let's just hire some experienced people. That's very hard to do. I'm in New Mexico. We only have about 25,000 nurses in the state. Compare that to Texas, where you have close to 300,000. You're looking at Arizona, that's 70,000. Like, we just have a fraction of that pool. So, you know, you have to be a little bit business savvy on then how you're going to close this gap, because you're probably not going to get those experienced nurses beaten down the door. We pretty much are using the same pool throughout the city of the nurses we have available. So your best bet is to try to grow your own. And, you know, if we need to do traveler contracts for that med surge, those are much cheaper than your specialty contracts, your OR, your ICU, your ED. And so you really can almost get two for one. So if we can grow one up internally, that you can backfill kind of in that way with your travelers. So, you know, just kind of rearranging those costs, that's a cost benefit for both the employee for their growth, because you're investing that money in their growth, right? But it's still a cost savings because you're not spending the money on the back end on those travelers.
Again, such great points to shed some light on how expansive the role of partner for practice transitions really is, and how creative in our thinking we can be to meet the needs of our organization. I think you've given our listeners some really great food for thought as far as how do you continue to develop and leverage, and like you said, grow your own within your organization. Rachel, I'd like to shift gears a little bit with the thinking about the role, partner for practice transitions. How does this role feed into the responsibilities of the NPD practitioner? So partner for practice transition role as it relates to education, collaborative partnerships, competency management, role development, research EBPQI, orientation and onboarding, our big six. Where do you see that those intersections happening?
I am happy to share my thoughts on that. How much time do we have? Okay, so when you think of that role of that partner for practice transition, what you're really saying is, what is our workforce pipeline from before they get to us, when they're with us, and as we develop them throughout their career? In NPD, I really like to think of things kind of in two buckets. You have your current staff that work for you here already, and then you have the folks coming in the door. When you look at a role of partner for practice transition, it hits all six, and this is how so. You have your student placements. If you're bringing students into your organization, that's their first taste of your organization. It's their first, you know, interaction with your culture. So you have this great opportunity to acculturate them right then and there. We were even looking into ways to bring folks in as student externs so they can do their capstone and work some with us as well, and then taking them on into that new grad nurse residency. So you're already bringing them in the door in the front end. So that's your orientation and onboarding components, right? Then you have the current staff, and you're looking at that competency management component, right? So how do we keep those skills up? So when we even had our COVID situation where you had to cross-train so many staff into the ICU to help support it, that's part of that role for a partner in practice transition, even though it was a very short turnaround. It's still providing them the education support, tools, precepting, and mentorship they need to be able to care for this new patient population rapidly. Then you're looking at the whole role development piece. Well, that is part of the practice transition piece because you're doing just that. We have to plan ahead. You know, what does this professional development look like for their lifespan? What are we working towards? Great if we got them in as a new grad. Now they're working on the floor. What's that next step? Is it fellowship? Is it going to be their certification? How are we helping them move along to get their BSN, their MSN, et cetera? You know, we're there at every point of the way to grow them. And hopefully those same people will be your leaders down the road. Those are your charge nurses, your managers, et cetera, your directors. When we look at evidence-based practice and quality improvement, key components of an accredited nurse residency program really want you to have your residents engaged in these processes. And, you know, from my perspective, I'm not looking at it like, hey, you guys have to do your own independent project. That's just not necessarily how real life works. In a hospital, how real life works is you're going to participate on a committee. It's rarely one person making a decision about something. So we don't want them integrated right into our quality improvement practices and our quality improvement plans, audit processes, our committees, and just integrate them right then and there. Not later on when they're finally a charge nurse, they've been working here 5 years, and you're like, hey, let's get, you know, so-and-so to work on this committee. No, we want to integrate it right from the start. So that's really where you get that buy-in. And I tell you what, there's nothing like increased engagement when you see the fruits of your efforts. You've been working hard to prevent cotties, and then you're seeing the dial. You're seeing us move the dial to reduce those numbers because you were part of that process. It's very rewarding to see that happen. And in terms of that education place, of course, yes, we're developing those education curriculums to provide the education and tools and resources they need. So I see it touching on each part. Oh, I didn't mention collaborative partnerships. You're partnering with the schools. We're partnering with the leaders. We're partnering with quality, regulatory readiness. I feel like as an educator at NPD, we're almost into everything because our staff are into everything. So we have to help them feel comfortable in any of the roles that they may be in.
I love that you pointed out collaborative partnerships because Jillian and I have really been exploring academic partnerships lately because we've had a thing about the experience complexity gap. And I mean a thing. And we really see academic partnerships as a way to help close that gap. And we've been looking at how can NPD form these collaborative partnerships with academic institutions outside of what we've just talked about, orientation and onboarding and people going back for their, you know, MSN, DNP and whatnot. Like, what can we do to really leverage these academic partnerships so that we can better perform our role as partners for practice transitions? What can we do with research, especially since you've got that kind of background? How can we use those relationships for that? How can we use it for quality? How can we use it for EBB?
I totally agree. I'm really lucky. I have in this state, we have quite a few large collaborative partnerships where you have partnerships with all the local hospitals and the schools. New Mexico is a little bit different. Across our entire state, we have a unified nursing curriculum, which is kind of interesting. So wherever you start school at, if it's in an ADN program, it's easy to transition to your BSN program to really help promote getting those BSN nurses. So it's kind of unique. And the great thing with these types of true collaboratives is we're providing our input of what we're seeing. Hey, these are the new grads. This is maybe the things that we're seeing. And they're providing us with their challenges. For example, the COVID situation, many folks didn't get all of the clinical hours they would normally get. And they're saying to us like, hey, just know we did our best with this, but this is a real gap. What are you the employers, heads up, you know, what are your plans? How can we partner to make sure they don't miss out? So here at my organization, I pitched this to our senior leadership who was totally supportive. I'm very blessed to have them. What we chose to do with our residency program is we let them have three 12-hour shifts throughout the week, and then every 2 weeks do an additional 4-hour class. So we typically hire them at 0.9. For this situation, we let them work up to 0.1. So, you know, your organization is paying for those extra 4 hours for them to be in that classroom time without taking away from time on the floor. We wanted to make sure they got enough practice hours during orientation to feel comfortable, and providing them with any additional skills classes that they may need if they didn't get those opportunities during school.
I want to ask you too, Rachel, because I mean, we made a concerted effort to pick board members to discuss these roles. Do you see becoming a board member with this association or any association also as a role transition?
Yes, we should have a whole, we could have a whole podcast on
talk about that. I think it's interesting. And I think, I mean, we've heard more nurses need to be on boards. So can you speak a little bit to that, like encourage people, because I think they find it very intimidating, but that's really a way for us to have a voice. So if you can talk about that role transition and just kind of how you can navigate that.
I'm so glad you even asked. It's well, I was just talking with our coordinator as well. And I said, you know, we need to have an in-service just on this topic alone, aside from advocacy, which big fan of, but also participating in boards and, you know, ownership of your practice is essentially what this is. And, you know, it does look different. I do belong to several boards. I am the president-elect for the New Mexico Center for Nurse Excellence, as well as a board member for the New Mexico Nurses Association. And I'm currently on the ballot for the ANA treasurer that's coming up for the delegate assembly in June. But my first time to participate on the board, I was excited to do it because, again, I went through an advocacy fellowship through ANA, and I felt very passionately that, hey, we have to be a voice for our own profession and our own specialty. But I didn't know what to expect or what it really meant when you first go into that. It's not like you have a class on it, right? And it is a transition. I think people should be more aware of that, that, you know, being part of the board on the association looks very different than being a part of the board on like the Nursing Center for Excellence. There's no constituency there. We have our funding through the board, our board of nursing. So that looks very different in how that role is compared to representing a membership. So when you're there, you're advocating for your profession, but you're there as a voice of the member. And you really have to kind of step back and remember that, like, what does the membership want? It's not necessarily what Rachel wants or other members of the board want. And it can be intimidating because a lot of times, yes, those people on the boards, I know for me, I was sitting on the board with a lot of my heroes. Like they wrote some of the books that I read, you know, so I was already intimidated. It's true. But what I found is they wanted to hear my voice. That's why they chose me to be on the board. What I would love is to see more floor nurses participate at this level, because you know what? A good friend of mine and my mentor, she says all the time, if you're not at the table, then you're on the menu. So you need to be at the table. You need to have your voice heard. So if you're a nurse on the floor, and I know they're busy, I'm the director of a unit, I see it right now. They are so busy. But at the same time, they're the voice of the customer, so to speak. They are at the point of care. They are coming with the frontline set of eyes of what healthcare needs. So I would encourage those folks don't be intimidated. If anything, you will be welcomed. If, you know, they want your voice. It's the most important voice at the table, in my opinion.
I think that is a perfect segue to this last question, Rachel, that we have. And I think you've answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What do you find most impactful in fulfilling the role as a partner for practice transitions? Does it tie into that opportunity for advocacy and also relating to your role as a change agent? I hear a lot of those pieces coming through in what you just spoke about. So what is it that you find most impactful?
Oh my goodness, maybe I answered it. I'm passionate about what I do. I'm sure you can tell already. But for me, what I find most impactful is when I see that I've made some sort of impact in helping a new nurse be successful in their career. My Facebook reminded me just the other day of, hey, here's your very first cohort you had back in 2016. Those sweet, kind 6 people who trusted me with their career. Like, you know, and it was sort of profound to me because here we are 5 years later. They are very successful. I could not be more proud of them. I'm still in contact with these guys. But I just think about how we went down that path and they trusted me. And what I mean by that is we were starting this brand new residency. It wasn't built. I literally built it each week as we got ready to meet. It was my project for my master's degree. So I would write the curriculum. It would get graded. And then I'd teach it on Monday. We did this the whole semester. Wow. And they knew I was transparent, but I was selling them on this idea that hadn't come to pass yet. And they trusted me with it. And there's no way in the world I would have let them down. And to see them now, see them successful, some are in NP school, others have went on to get their master's, some are leaders already and charge nurses, and that to me is that most impactful. You know, I've hopefully changed their career path for the better.
Rachel, so it is because of a similar experience I had as a new grad working with NPD team members at the organization I was a nurse residency of. They were the reason why I sought out NPD myself. So I know without a doubt you have inspired each and every one of those individuals in ways that you probably aren't even aware of. So what a fulfilling story and opportunity to reflect on that inaugural group that you poured yourself into.
I bought them a lot of lunches though. I kept, I was like, please get them. And I remember they said, we know you don't think you're doing a good job, but trust us, it's going really well. Like, so anxious. Anyway. Good times.
That's awesome to hear, Rachel. And it's always nice to kind of hear, I think, like real stories about like NPD, our finished product always looks so amazing and nobody knows what goes behind it. And sometimes it is, you are scurrying at the last minute trying to get something together because leadership just told you tomorrow we need to implement this. And that's the reality of it. But it really is, I think the attitude that you say you took with this that probably made you so successful, because as long as we present it as, hey, we're taking this journey together and I'm here for you and I'm invested in you and your future. And I think people buy into that. And I think that's a face we need to show of NPD is, hey, you know, I'm not perfect, but I'm going to do my very best to make sure that you have a good journey with whatever education or whatnot I'm going to help you with. So I really appreciate your saying that. Any words of wisdom for our listeners out there?
I just wanted to say, I love the way that you started the conversation that it's not always about a residency program, right? We're seeing that's a very popular move. We know that the research shows this is what they need, and I wanted to go that direction. But I wouldn't want anyone who didn't have that to feel that it was any less than. It's certainly not. You are that partner in practice transition for every major change that nurse is going through throughout their career, no matter what that looks like. Is it new charge nurse? Is it a new specialty, new to their practice? You know, we make that impact, small, medium, or large, however that turns out.
Thank you so much, Rachel, for joining us today. And listeners, you'll find references posted in our discussion forum. And we recommend that you take a look at the scope and standards, or as I call it, the NPD Bible, because that's got all of your roles and responsibilities and all of the competencies that really kind of help guide you in your day-to-day of NPD and this specialty. Also, check out the Transition to NPD Practice Fellowship online asynchronous modules. That's a really good way to try to figure out what our role is as NPD. It really dissects that for you and helps to define those roles and responsibilities. Also, check out the webinar Jillian and I did for Sigma. You can find it for free within their repository. It's titled Nursing Professional Development You Belong, and it discusses how to leverage academic partnerships within your organization to help cover that experience complexity gap. Check out our lineup for Transition to Practice in this year's Aspire to Inclusivity, August 3rd through the 6th. For those of you listening, if you have any other questions or comments regarding Partner for Practice transitions, please post on this thread in the podcast discussion forum. You can access this through the Tools and Resources tab at www.anpd.org. Choose the podcast forum and you will see this episode's topic. You can listen to our podcast series by subscribing to NPD Forecast on the ANPD website, on the podcast page, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Thank you so much.
This NPD Forecast series analyzes information gathered through environmental scanning. Our goal at ANPD is to be your leading resource for NPD practice. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star rating on your preferred podcast platform, as well as a review. And if you feel so inclined, share with your friends and colleagues on social media. Be sure to tag ANPD when you do. Those ratings and reviews help us grow this platform and extend our reach. As NPD practitioners, we know our strength is in our sense of community. So the more you share the NPD forecast, the more valuable this environmental scanning resource will be. We would love to hear from you and encourage you to post podcast topic recommendations in the podcast discussion forum available on our website.
Thanks for listening. For more information, visit our website at anpd.org.